What is both of yours favorite quote from season one from any character?
Okay, let's see if we can say it at the same time. Okay. Ready? Say 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, ready? 3, 2, 1, go.
The egg bar is covered.
What are you doing here?
Oh, sure. That completely jumbled quote together.
I had the egg bar is coveted as f***.
And I said, what in the wet f*** are you doing here?
Both Dylan quotes, because he has the best lines.
He has the spiciest lines, for sure. Yeah. This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm Shamita Basu. Today, Ben Stiller and Adam Scott on season 2 of Severance. What if there was a way to live as two versions of yourself? That's the premise of the Apple TV show Severance, directed by Ben Stiller and starring Adam Scott. Adam plays the main character, Mark Scout, who's agreed to be severed. Outside of the office, Mark, also referred to as Mark's outie, is depressed and grieving the death of his wife. In the first episode, we see Mark talking to his sister Devin about it.
Hey, how's the good doctor therapy man with that weird little mustache? You're not going?
Well, the work things helped.
Yeah. I'm proud of you for taking that job. I really am. And I think she would have been too. I know she would have been. I just feel like forgetting about her for 8 hours a day isn't the same thing as healing.
When Mark heads to work at a company called Lumen, he's known only as Mark S., a.k.a. Mark's innie. Here's Mark S. in season one talking to a new employee, Helly R.
So I'll never leave here.
You'll leave at 5. Well, actually, they stagger our exit, so 5:15. But it won't feel like it, not to this version of you anyway.
Do you have a family?
You'll never know.
The show is full of mystery. Both the viewer and a lot of the characters have no idea what kind of work the innies do at Lumen or how they got there. It's beautifully shot, visually stunning, masterfully written, filmed, and acted, and asks deep questions about what makes us human. The New Yorker called it sci-fi for the soul. If you haven't seen season one, you've been officially warned. This conversation you're about to hear is full of spoilers. But if you are caught up, this episode is a great primer as you get ready to watch season two, which is out on January 17th. Ben Stiller and Adam Scott stopped by our studios to tell me about it. Well, listen, thank you both for being here again. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, happy to
be talking with you both.
Yeah, thank
happy
you.
Happy to be here.
I thought maybe we could actually start with the cliffhanger ending of season one, because it's all that I've been thinking about for years now, and I assume a lot of people have too. You give so much new information in that last episode. I just couldn't believe it. My mind was getting blown every few minutes. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. The wife is alive. Helly is an Egan. I mean, it was a lot of information at once, more than most people would probably pack into a cliffhanger last episode of a season. Ben, I read somewhere that this was your idea to do this much revealing up until the edge.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think, you know, Dan Erickson and I and, you know, our whole team and Adam and all the producers and, you know, we were thinking about how far to go with the season, really. And it seemed like that was a good place to end. Dan had thought through a lot further, which is good because with a show like this, you want to know where you're going. And then it was just a question of like, okay, we have to make this sort of educated guess where we think the audience might enjoy stopping and feel like, you know, it would make them want to come back for season two. And also Apple hadn't picked us up for season two. So we thought, let's make them have to pick us up.
You made a compelling argument.
And there's sort of this constant sort of internal negotiation going on that we're always trying to keep our eyes and ears attuned to, which is how many events do you really want to stuff into a season? You don't want the events of the show to get ahead of the audience. You want the audience to be able to follow along emotionally. You don't want to push and get ahead of them because then certain things start to feel unearned and the audience starts to disengage a little bit. Mm-hmm. At least that happens to me as an audience member. If I'm watching a show that I feel is kind of getting ahead of where I'm at, then they start to lose me. So that's something that we're always trying to keep our eye on and something that Ben and Dan are really good at kind of calibrating.
Not to mention there's so much world building also happening, right? I was reading in another interview that you two did talking about one scene where Adam, your innie character, is putting on a shirt. And when you were asked to do it, you were kind of struggling through putting on a shirt, right? And Ben was like, what are you doing? You're like, well, my innie never puts on a shirt.
Right.
He arrives with his shirt on. Does he have knowledge of how to use shirts?
Right.
Tell me a little bit about how you negotiate the terms of the world you've created in real time.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like you have to kind of look at every scene and go, okay, yeah, there's a moment here where you could have this discovery of this experience for the first time, but there's also a version where somehow there's an innate knowledge that's there that transcends the severance barrier.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise, every time, you know, Adam's doing something he's possibly never done before, it would be like this, you know, this wondrous moment of buttoning his shirt.
Every episode would be 4 hours long if we did that.
And I think the audience would get frustrated with that. I think, you know, it's about really prioritizing, like, what's important in the storytelling. And, you know, that's an interesting question, I think, just in the premise of the show. You know, what does transcend the severance barrier? And if you're cutting off all of your memories of who you are and what your life is about, what is innately part of who you are? And I think the core of that is our emotions. And I think that's the interesting sort of territory in the show to explore rather than little things like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's easy to forget maybe when the show first came out, but it was 2022. I think a lot of people were thinking more deeply about their relationship with their workspace.
Yeah.
Of course, post-pandemic and what it meant to work, actually, even just defining the act of work and what that means for us and ourselves and our souls.
Yeah.
What attracted you both to this project, to this script, to this very rich ground?
Well, that was something we never could have anticipated, just that the show would come out at this cultural moment where everyone was reassessing their emotional and physical relationship with the workplace.
See, that's surprising to me because it feels so born of that moment.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, Dan wrote the script, you know, the pilot script, like, I think 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we started production on the show October of 20. So, you know, we were about to start when the pandemic hit. So it definitely, you know, informed everything we did. And, you know, for me, what I was drawn to was just Dan's writing in the beginning. Was this premise was simple. It was believable. But it was so unique. It was fascinating to think about. I love the idea that it's a sort of a science fiction type show, but really there's nothing happening there that's not able to actually happen in real life, except maybe for the technology and this chip.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then this other layer of the kind of, you know, I've heard it called like corporate satire or something, you know,
mm-hmm.
And the idea of what the ideology of this company is and the almost religious nature of it. And so, you know, there are just a lot of different elements that were in there. And then it was just really funny and unique, and the dialogue was great. And it reminded me of, you know, these great office workplace shows and movies that have come out in the last 20 years.
Many of which Adam has been in.
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons I thought of Adam, because I knew that he could do that, but also had so much more going on. And I think that's the most important thing, is that, you know, the show sets up a premise where it might seem familiar, but there are a lot of things that are off and weird, and it's going to go to places that you wouldn't expect.
Mm. Why not cast yourself in this project?
Oh my God. I mean,
yeah. Why not?
Because I don't want to watch me. I want to watch Adam Scott. I never thought about it for a second. And as a director, for me, the last few years, not acting and stuff that I'm directing has been so much more satisfying and, frankly, just like more enjoyable. And I think it all comes down to casting and who's the right person for the role.
Mm. And Adam, let's talk about your acting in this, because it's really superb. It's really something to see, because you really have two roles. You're really playing two characters in this. You're playing the Mark Audi version and then Mark S. Innie. It feels like you can see in so many ways, and it's not just the trick of the camera, although there is a little bit of interesting aesthetic work happening. As you transform from your Audi self to your inner self, there's slight changes in your physicality even that you are able to evoke when playing these two characters. Can you talk a little bit about what goes into that?
Yeah. Thanks for saying that. I mean, you know, from the start, it was really important to Ben and to Dan and I that this feel like, rather than two completely separate characters, that they feel like the same guy, because they are the same guy. They're just like different parts of the same, almost different halves of the same person, much in the way that you behave differently if you're visiting your parents and in with your family that you're completely comfortable around, or the way you behave if you're at a cocktail party with a bunch of strangers, mm-hmm. right? You have these different sort of personas that you play with. And so with Mark, one of these, his outie, has 40 some odd years of life experience of a full, rich life, and the other is, for all intents and purposes, 2.5 years old. And so it's almost like wiping the slate clean and vice versa every time we're kind of going back and forth. And those two circumstances, they do have physical effects. The innie is more light on his feet, and the outie is a bit more weighed down by what life has kind of wrought on him.
Hmm.
And so it was just a matter of trial and error and finding what worked and kind of working it out with Ben and figuring out, and it, particularly with the transformation in the elevator and trying to distill it down to this moment of just a few seconds of going between the two and really kind of trying to figure out what that is and what each one of them really are. And it ended up really kind of helping define each side of the character.
I mean, let's talk a little bit about the aesthetics of the show, mm-hmm. because so beautifully crafted, so intentionally crafted. I mean, Ben, can you speak a little bit to how you built this world? And not just Lumen in the offices, but also the outside world, because it is notably evocative of darkness and heaviness and burden, as we've been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, that became a collaboration working, you know, with our cinematographer, Jessica Lee Gagné, and Jeremy Hindle, who's our production designer. And, you know, it was so clear to me the idea of like what the severed world was, and in terms of the starkness and the cleanness of it. And the outside world was a little bit more of a, you know, kind of a challenge to think about what to do with it. And I felt it was important not to ever see anything that was like a touchstone of our material world here. It's the same basic reality, but we don't quite know what year it is or exactly where this place is. And we wanted to make sure that it was all kept kind of, the inside's very generic and the outside's, I want it to be generic too in its own way.
Yeah, it's disorienting, so, actually.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun to work when you have the freedom in a genre to do something like that. You know, usually you don't have that freedom to try things, you know, and to play around and go like, well, maybe they could have like a smartphone, but, you know, they also have Xerox machines and, you know, right. or like the cars are not quite new. And you don't want to do it arbitrarily, but it was all kind of like trying to figure out a homogenous kind of way of doing it. And we found the, you know, Bell Labs building in Holmdel, New Jersey. That was the first location we found, which really dictated a lot of the style of the interiors of the show and the sets that we created, because that's just an amazing architectural thing that's down there.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the making of season two. It's been 3 years since season one came out. I understand that the experience of making season one was very different from season two, season one happening during the pandemic, as you said, Ben. Season two now, everyone knows the show. You have a very excited fan base. There are all these fan theories flying around. What was different about heading into season two?
Well, first of all, you know, we made season one in a bubble. Like Ben said, we started shooting in October of 2020. And it took 9 months or so. And by the time the show came out, the craziest thing for me was seeing these terms that we had been throwing around for a couple of years, like innie and outie and the break room and all of these things that no one cared about for the longest time. We were just making this weird little show off in the corner. We're now out in the culture, and thank goodness we didn't know how the show would land. We didn't know if anyone would like it or if we would all be embarrassed. I mean, we all loved it, but you never know how something's
going to... There's a lot of shows out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of television.
First of all, sure. Are you going to break through? And secondly, is anyone going to like it? And the fact that people did was wonderful. But then suddenly, Not only were these funny terms that Dan had come up with, these names of ridiculous things, they were out in the culture, but we suddenly were having to worry about security and use code words for the show and a particular season or a particular thing, and needed these kind of encrypted emails and all of this wild stuff. Again,
so you're saying all this protection, all this security and secrecy was because there's so much appetite from fans to learn more?
Yeah, we had, I think, a very committed fan base. We realized also that, you know, the most important thing for the show to continue for the people who love it is to keep these secrets, because that's all you have, really.
Yeah.
Is like the
yeah.
storytelling.
You know, I hear this a lot from writers and creators in this era where fan feedback is just so much more accessible than ever before, which is to say that sometimes fans come up with incredible ideas, great ideas. And sometimes writers say, that's a good one. Maybe we should try and incorporate that. Or yeah. I wish I'd thought of that.
By the way, that just never existed before social media,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, sure.
Like when I was growing up in the 70s, like maybe you'd like write a letter, you know, or something, you know.
Right. Right.
You know. Yeah, it was like they made television shows on a distant planet, you know?
Yeah.
It was
they
just
get beamed down to us.
Yeah, yeah. A different world. It mm-hmm. was untouchable. And yeah, I would write a letter to David Letterman or whatever, but you know, you don't ever expect anything to any response or any.
What were you writing to David Letterman?
Well,
about?
I was trying to get on viewer mail.
Okay.
Oh, you right.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
Sure.
Did you ever?
No.
No.
Did you ever get Parks and Rec fan mail about, hey, I think this should happen or that should happen to the characters?
I mean, we did. I remember we were kind of in that.
It was probably around
world,
that time.
Right around when things were switching over to social media more intensely. So we would get bags of actual mail.
Yeah.
But it is a really different process making a show now, especially with streaming, because you do all the episodes before anybody has any feedback. And doing a show like Parks and Rec, where you would be doing it and then.
Like 6 weeks later, it's on the air.
So, even before social media, people could write in and go like, I love this character. And they get all the fan mail for that character. And then they beef up that character. With doing something like this, there's like almost too much feedback. But then you still have to then just go and do it all in a bubble again.
Yeah.
And commit to your choices. And commit to choices in, you know, season two that, you know, we made 3 years ago, you know, so... You hope that people will like it, but it's, again, just kind of like going with your gut and hopefully trying to please yourself as an audience, which I think is ultimately the best thing you can do if you're making something, I think.
You know, hearing you both talk about the process is making me think a bit about a conversation that I had with Tom Hanks a little while ago on this show.
I'll just pick up that name you dropped.
So Tom, my friend Tom was telling me the other day, he wrote his last novel was about movie making. And that's what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And how fun it was for him to write something that's about the movie making world.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how, you know, when you're in the middle of making something, a movie or a show or whatever, you don't know really where it's going to go.
Right.
And you've got all of these competing ideas at once, as you were just mentioning. You know, you've got the producers and you've got the writers and you've got the actors and now you have fans also. I mean, does that idea resonate with you both in terms of how you came to season two, especially of making the show?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just think of being in it and you've committed and you have to, you know, figure out, it's like inch by inch, scene by scene, page by page, day by day. And it's impossible to have the bird's eye view when you're in it, but you start to build it brick by brick. I can use any metaphor, but it starts to grow and then you start to have scenes and then you start to have, oh, we have an episode and you start to see it actually become a reality.
Yeah.
And there's always stress. There's always worry. There's money. There's the budget. There's time, all those things. But, you know, I don't know. It's like the process and being in it and doing it is always, for me, is always the best part of it, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And with something like this, that everything kind of fits together so specifically like a puzzle, we also would have the luxury if something didn't quite fit. Sometimes we could go back and fix a little piece of a scene or a line of dialogue or something because everything has to be just so. And so by the time we're out and pushing it out into the world and sharing it, that's its own experience. But I agree with Ben that the making of it is rewarding in and of itself. And even if the thing never came out and this was just our job to make this thing, for me, that would be enough because it's an incredibly satisfying endeavor.
And also, just to add into that, like sometimes it's good to not be thinking about when it's going to come out. At least for me, yeah. Like I like to sort of fool myself into thinking, okay, well, we're going to do, you know, we do like 5 or 10 takes or whatever. And so every time you do a take, it's like, well, that's not going to be the take that's in there. This one, well, it might be the take. It might not be the take. And it gives you a freedom then to try stuff, you know?
Were there any interesting discoveries that you found you made in making season 2 about the characters, about the story, about the world that you've built?
Well, I think that as you kind of push further into a world and into a show, and one of the great things about this season is that the aperture kind of opens up on everything. You know, like Ben said, at the end of season 1, we got to peek into the lives of the outies of all the characters. So suddenly we were starting season 2 and starting a show with, overnight, we had twice as many characters on the show. And so it's really opening up the world to see into their lives. But also, as far as my character is concerned, both Innie and Outie Mark, their worlds are both opening up as well with this new information that's key to both of their lives. It is kind of leading them down paths they'd never gone before. So we see the world of the show opening up, and we see the world of all the characters opening up as well.
Yeah, I felt that watching the actors and our crew really come back in season 2, I'd never done a season 2 of anything. Everything's been canceled that I've ever done. So, or, you know, not meant to go 2 seasons. But that's what I say. But no.
So you've never done a season 2.
I've never done a season 2. And
The Ben Stiller Show was a limited series.
It was a limited series by the limited audience that didn't watch. But the ownership that the actors took over their characters, which I saw develop over season 1, and our crew that all came back, just the level of commitment coming back for season 2 was really, that was pretty amazing to me, because I knew the actors knew the characters better than Dan or me, or, you know, they really did.
Adam, were there any ways in which you feel like you deepened your understanding of Mark S. and even maybe made your own mark on who he is, his Innie version or his Outie version?
Yeah, I mean, certainly in season 2, we get to know particularly Outie Mark a little bit more, and we get to go through different kinds of experiences with him as he kind of really starts to fight his way towards something, and get to see the Innie and Outie Mark kind of moving towards each other in a certain way, and, you know, kind of trying to negotiate whether their interests are common or whether they diverge. And it was, you know, certainly a lot of really fun investigative work diving into that and how they approach it. I'm trying not to spoil anything. I'm sorry. This starts sounding purposefully unspecific.
No. And I'm going to keep pressing in case you get very, very close to a spoiler, an Easter egg for folks to hang on to. I mean, as you think about these two characters that you're playing, really starting to approach each other more and more, how does that manifest in how you play them both?
Well, I mean, they remain separate. That's the most important thing. And their interests are separate. What they need and whether or not they need something specifically from each other is the big question. And if they did, how they endeavor to do that would be another big question.
Mm. And not to mention, they're experiencing two very different loves and attractions, right?
Yeah.
Which is something that gets explored in the show, but something that I was thinking a lot about in season 1 is just the idea of love being such a dominant and innate sort of human need that whether you're an Innie or Outie, you're striving for it. We see Bert and Irv, you know, finding each other. We see this love connection starting to develop between Mark and Helly. But even thinking about Dylan and becoming aware that he has a kid or kids,
yeah,
and the love for a child that he wasn't aware that he actually had somewhere in him. Tell me a little bit about how you think about love as a theme on the show.
Well, I mean, I think it's a very important part of the show. And that basic question of, you know, it's actually, I think Dylan says it, does love transcend severance? He says it in season one. And, you know, that, yeah, that's, the, you know, ultimately these are human beings, you know, on the inside, on the, or on the severed floor, you know, the innies are in a way, you know, in a prison, you know, they're devoid of real, any, you know, human interaction except for the few people that they know down there. So that's, to me, you know, the question is like, how are these people, the human aspect of, you know, who they are, how is that going to eventually, it has to come out, this need for connection, this need for love, regardless of even the outie and the innie sharing that feeling. I think the relationships on the show, you know, if you're going to watch it as a viewer, what you're going to connect with are the friendships and the romantic relationships. And I think that's, to me, the core of what it is to be a person. And so, yeah, I mean, story-wise, I think that plays a lot into season two. And watching Innie Mark kind of grow up and kind of take more of a sense of, you know, be more proactive in sort of advocating for himself, while at the same time, he's definitely, you know, got this information that his outie's wife is down there, but that's a dilemma for him. And yeah, ultimately, like, it's all love and, you know, that's all the, I don't know, I feel like that's what life is about.
Yeah,
everything is about it.
Every great story begins and ends with love, essentially, right?
Yeah. And what is love? You know?
Right. And also, is severance something that's powerful enough to block it? Or does it permeate? What is that?
But it's interesting, too, because Mark, the severance barrier can block any Mark's feelings, maybe, of love for his wife, mm-hmm. who he never met. But he's going to have his own feelings of love. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, a lot of figuring out how the severance and going from one, from the innie to the outie, how it works in season one, a lot of what we were figuring out too was what feelings from either down there or up there make it through to the other. And there is a feeling inside of you, but maybe you just don't know what it is. And like Petey says in season one, the feelings make it through, they make their way down there.
Yeah.
You don't quite have the emotional vocabulary to categorize or place it.
Yeah. Mm,
there's something ephemeral that kind of something residual.
And that has to go somewhere.
That passes through somewhere. Yeah. Can I tell you one of my favorite fan theories that I've read on Reddit? And you can just touch your nose if it's true. You don't have to actually say anything. One of my favorites is this theory that Rickon and Devin are actually innies. And there is a couple of clues to it. Rickon, Devin. They both literally have the "in" in their names.
I haven't heard this one.
Rickon's book makes it inside
right. The
world of Lumen. It just feels like there's a porosity there between their worlds in a kind of inexplicable way. I don't know. Something seems up with them.
I'm touching my eyebrow right now.
Ooh, okay. All right. Inexplicable. No. Inexplicable.
No, that's a great theory.
It is a good theory. Why do you like that one in particular?
I like it because I feel like it gives me some intrigue to hold on to for season two. Uh-huh. I feel like they can be really interesting allies to Mark S.'s outie now on this journey. And there's something odd about those two characters that would make sense to me if they had a backstory.
I heard one that related to like the numbers, like that everything was a simulation or something like that.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
Thought that was interesting.
They were dreaming the whole time.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I almost feel like the simulation theories and the it's all a dream theories are a bit too, you know, it's just this wide swath of nothing's real.
Right. It's too easy. But if none of it was real?
Yeah. I love thinking about a simulation. And I mean, that's always a fun kind of exercise to think about.
So I have a fun little something to end on that I thought we could do. Here at Apple, we are all huge fans of this show, obviously. And in fact, Apple News is putting out a special Severance-themed crossword puzzle.
Cool.
Would you guys be up for trying to answer some of the crossword
100%.
Prompts? Okay. Okay, this is a pretty easy one to start. It's 16 across, not that okay. You can see it, but it's three letters.
Okay.
Ambrose Egan to Keir Egan.
Three letters?
Three letters.
CEO?
Ambrose to Keir?
To Keir.
This is embarrassing.
Their relationship to each other.
Son?
Son.
Ah.
S-O-N. Okay. Son.
That's good.
You got it.
That's good.
That's it.
I have to be honest. The order of the CEOs, yeah. I'm not, like, I couldn't tell you, obviously, that. But.
Did you not read the cult handbook that gets cast out that everybody's supposed to read and commit to memory? I guess not. Okay, here's another clue. This is seven letters. Blank in law to describe relatives like Gemma and Devin.
Seven letters?
Sister?
Okay. Sisters. I'll give it to you.
Okay. Sisters-in-law.
Seven.
Right.
Sisters-in-law.
Okay.
There it is. Okay. Now we're getting a little harder.
Okay.
This is three letters. Like the name Heli for a tortured soul. This is a tough one.
For a tortured soul. I would take a hint.
Okay.
Or I'll give you a hint. It starts with an A.
I wish my daughter was here because we do the New York Times mini crossword every day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she does it in 30 seconds flat.
Really?
Usually. And it takes me like at least three times as long.
Crosswording is a specific skill.
Heli, tortured soul.
I think I should pull a Severance season one and leave it on this cliffhanger. We're not even going to tell people. Maybe I can tell you two once we're done recording. Okay. But maybe we should leave it to listeners to go and figure it out for themselves when they see the crossword.
Yeah, okay. Let's leave it and just leave everybody with the idea that we're not that smart.
This is a tough one, and non-visual is very tough.
Yeah.
In 3 years, we'll do another episode and continue where we left off.
In 3 years, we'll put out the crossword, and then they can solve it then. Anything else you want to share about season two? Fans should be looking forward to?
Sure. We could give you a sort of a line-by-line, you know, recap of what happens.
Yeah.
We could go starting
through.
With the end.
Could you start with the spoilers? Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Going backwards.
So it turns out that they're all robots.
No. Oh,
that's
no.
Right. That's
that was
right.
A fan theory.
Sorry.
I like the least. Well, Ben and Adam, thank you both so much
for
your time.
Yeah.
You can watch Severance on Apple TV Plus. And check out Apple News' Severance-themed crossword puzzle. We'll include a link to both on our show notes page.